Good morning, this is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, August 6th. It was late last night, Friday, when word came that S&P had downgraded the U.S. for the first time ever since awarding it a AAA credit rating back in 1941 to AA+, after warning on July 14, it would examine closely any deficit reduction package that was part of raising the debt ceiling. So while there's no way I can comment extensively on this at the time, though it certainly was not an unexpected development, we'll wait for market reaction this coming week. For now, S&P said in its statement, quote, "The downgrade reflects our opinion that the fiscal consolidation plan that Congress and the administration recently agreed to falls short of what, in our view, would be necessary to stabilize the government's medium-term debt dynamics." Now, I do not have to go back and tailor some of my following comments because I've been consistent where we were headed all along, and it wasn't Shangri-La. Anyway, you having fun yet? Nothing like a 1,200 plus point drop in the Dow Jones in 2 weeks to get one's attention. And boy, that debt ceiling compromise was well received, wasn't it? The Dow promptly lost 265 points. The day was signed in response. And forgive me if I remain a bit smug when it comes to Europe and its many problems, seeing as I've been all over the issue since spring 2010 and wrote this past January 1st that, quote, "the European debt crisis is with us well into 2012. But while from a prediction standpoint, I've historically taken things 1 year at a time, such as my call for a 5-7% decline in the major U.S. averages this year, in recent months, I have specifically been forecasting an outright crash in 2012 on the order of 30% in a relatively short period of time, days, not months. So did we start to see this the past 2 weeks instead? No. My call specifically concerns the U.S. debt crisis, and I told you Congress would end up with a lousy compromise in raising the debt ceiling and already stated the $2 trillion in supposed debt reduction in no way would do the trick, and that there will come a moment in time next year after further putrid growth. Some of us would take putrid the next 12 months at this point, when the realization will hit with perhaps another awful budget deficit figure and or a failed Treasury auction that our situation is beyond repair, thus triggering the crash, which will be exacerbated by high-frequency trading, an example of which we saw this past week with the return of extreme volatility. I also stated the last few months that if Congress and the President had shown some guts, a little Tom Coburn-esque courage, and had come up with a credible $4 trillion deficit reduction plan, then it would have been off to the races. Alas, this wasn't to be, as I told you would be the case. I do just have to get this point out of the way. Some, such as economist Paul Krugman, whose New York Times op-ed I have posted in my Week in Review column, say we, including Europe, shouldn't be reducing spending in the face of a possible double-dip recession. I say it's about leadership, of which there is zero around the world these days. It's about selling it to the public, something David Cameron has been attempting to do in the UK with mixed success thus far, and on which Barack Obama has been AWOL. The other thing that Mr. Krugman and others of his ilk never mention is that if the world's investors ever believed the U.S. was serious about confronting its deficits, money would come flooding in like never before. The U.S. economy would suffer for a quarter or two because of the shock of the pain, but while others were laying the groundwork for the resurrection. You will never convince me otherwise. Alas, for now, the argument is irrelevant. As I go to post this week, the fury of the debt crisis in Europe may be lessening on a strictly short-term basis as Italy, along with Spain under attack all week as being the next targets in the rolling disaster movie, pledged to speed up austerity measures and reforms in exchange for European Central Bank help. Friday around 1 p.m. New York Wall Street time, Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi announced his government would move budget cuts forward a year to balance the budget in 2013, ahead of an already aggressive 2014 schedule. The ECB had demanded such action and in return will now buy the sovereign debt of Italy, and probably Spain, as needed to stabilize the credit markets and allow these two to continue to access the private market for financing. A previous Berlusconi plan was ripped by ECB officials because the budget cuts didn't come until after elections scheduled for 2013, which is similar to what our own Congress did, as I'll get into shortly. What was a big contributor to this week's global contagion was that before Friday's move by Italy, which helped the U.S. rally back some in the afternoon, the ECB was idiotically buying Portuguese and Irish debt, even though these two already have bailout plans of their own, and to drive down their rates is rather meaningless because they no longer have to raise money in the market. Plus, all week you had conflicting statements from the ECB and European Commission, with one blaming the other and various government officials contradicting each other. EC Chief Jose Manuel Barroso, for example, said the big Greek bailout 2 compromise reached on July 21 was already a failure. It is clear that we are no longer managing a crisis just in the euro area periphery, he said, referring to Greece, Ireland, and Portugal. The 21st of July bold decisions on the Greek package and the increased flexibility of the European Financial Stability Fund, the EFSF, are not having their intended effect on the markets, i.e. so much for August vacations. I told you the new EFSF fund of 440 billion euros was woefully inadequate to deal with any crisis in Italy or Spain, it being barely sufficient for Greece, Ireland, and Portugal. But the fact is, as I write, it will take weeks to even get the EFSF to the 440 billion level unless Barroso is able to speed up the process. Now, I apologize ahead of time if action has been taken on this aspect by the time you hear this, but all 17 Eurozone governments and parliaments were supposed to ratify any new funding level. But not to make your head spin on this rather important stuff, a key part of the ECB's rescue plan is to create another EFSF of 500 billion or 940 billion euro collectively, which one would think might do the trick until Halloween. I mean, this is a freaking mess. We're still just on Europe, by the way, in case you're losing track. This week you had European banks facing short-term funding issues. The U.S. had a smaller version of same. It's clear Greece's privatization program, critical to their bailout success, is going very poorly, as in who would pay top dollar for anything in that place these days. And the economic data for some of Europe's shining stars, like Germany, is looking weaker. The continent needs growth. The United States needs growth. China needs to keep growing. We all need to grow. Instead, Germany's industrial production in June unexpectedly declined over May. German business confidence fell more than forecast in July. The Euro Area Purchasing Managers Index, PMI, for July was down to 50.4 from 52.0 in June, barely above the 50.0 dividing line between growth and contraction. The July PMI was 52 in Germany, 50.5 in France, 50.1 in Italy, 49.1 in the UK, 48.2 in Ireland, 45.6 in Spain, and 45.2 in Greece, to cite a few. Britain's growth forecast is down to 1.3% for 2011. Where is the growth going to come from, especially given the austerity measures? What's the catalyst? I mean, I'd go over there and do some partying myself to help stimulate things, but I'm getting too old for that. Plus, I have the same responsibilities here at home. Oh, there's so much to go through these days, it's hard to keep up, but for now, I'll leave you with a few factoids. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, said that if Greece's new bailout and austerity plan works, quote, public debt will fall below 60% of GDP over the next two decades. Well, this is absurd, and the OECD admits that. So its actual prediction is that Greek debt will not fall to 100% of GDP until 2035. Hell, I'll probably be dead by then, not to make it all about me. And here's another. U.S. bank and investment funds holdings in Italian and Spanish debt amount to $36.7 billion and $47.1 billion, respectively, which wouldn't be the end of the world taken in isolation. but indirect holdings through derivatives and other financial contracts total an additional $232 billion and $131 billion, according to the Washington Post. How the heck do you know these figures are remotely accurate? What has been my main complaint about Europe, going back to my first musings on the housing bubble in Spain 7 years ago? Transparency, or lack thereof. Well, let's move on to the good old U.S. of A., land of the free lunch, so many have come to believe. For the record, the House passed the $2.4 trillion, or it could be $2.1 trillion, debt ceiling compromise by a 269 to 161 vote. 95 Democrats and 66 Republicans said nay. In the Senate, it sailed through 74-26, with 19 Republicans voting against. So, what does this piece of crap actually do? Well, for starters, those who are bitching and moaning it will help bring down the economy need to know there are basically zero budget cuts through 2012. The pain doesn't start until 2013, if then, given the way Congress works. And as for the special panel of 6 congressional Republicans and 6 Democrats that is to recommend another round of cuts of $1.5 trillion, on top of the illusory initial $917 billion, these guys and gals are the ones with the tough work. Yet we already know what's going to happen. Republicans won't budge on taxes or defense cuts, and Democrats won't budge on protecting Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. The way it is supposed to work, then, if the panel doesn't bring a proposal to the House and Senate by Thanksgiving on the $1.5 trillion, and or Congress doesn't approve what the panel lays out by Christmas, then $1.2 trillion in cuts across the board will be mandated, half from the Pentagon, with Medicare then taking a 2% hit of its own. Now, understand through this whole process to come that not only is President Obama going to calibrate every move he makes in keeping with November 2012, but 23 of 33 Democratic Senate seats are up next year as well. And by the way, the nuclear option, the $1.2 trillion in automatic cuts, wouldn't come into play until 2013 as well. So just like Italy's first budget. Actually, the ones who really suffer in the interim are the states, who then pass on their problems to the municipalities. There will be tremendous uncertainty through this whole coming process as far as potential cuts in aid on top of those already imposed, and no doubt state and local government will continue to shed jobs. As for the military, well, I discussed that at length in my Week in Review column on StocksNews.com. But let's all hope that one result of the debt ceiling debacle and subsequent probable stalemate could finally be a real push for tax reform. Simpson Bowles had already issued a detailed proposal for both corporate and individual rates, and there's no reason their plan shouldn't be a starting point. But is our president up to the task of shepherding it through Congress and explaining to the people how we'd all benefit? As Stephen Moore, the Wall Street Journal editorial board, opined the other day, will Obama recognize that tax reform could save his presidency? As for Wall Street and economy, talk about carnage. It was the worst week since November 2008 for stocks and made the previous week's significant losses look like a tea party, pun intended. Not only did the Dow Jones extend its two-week loss to 10%, but the S&P 500 dropped 7.2% in the last 5 days, NASDAQ lost 8.1%, and the S&P Midcap and Russell 2000 indexes were both down 10% in 5 days. Ironically, Friday's jobs report for July, slightly better than expected, was a non-factor when compared to Europe and other economic news earlier in the week, such as a June reading on personal consumption that showed a decline. Ergo, we continue to deleverage and save rather than spend, and consumer spending is still about 70% of economic activity, so that makes it kind of important. A July reading on manufacturing, the national ISM figure, was also just 50.9 when 55 was expected, another bad sign. So the fact the economy added 117,000 jobs and the unemployment rate ticked down to 9.1% was practically treated with disdain after an initial pop, especially since the jobless rate fell because more Americans stopped looking. But with all the turmoil in the global markets, now attention turns to the Federal Reserve, which just so happens to have a now critical policy meeting on Tuesday, August 9. There's some talk of QE3, to which I'd ask, why? And just what the heck can the Fed accomplish at this point, given the already phenomenally low interest rates? Low interest rates haven't been holding back a housing recovery. The inability to get a mortgage, given the stricter credit standards, is. Low interest rates haven't led corporate America to go on a hiring spree. Instead, fears over the uncertain regulatory environment, our nation's deficits, and general uncertainty are holding CEOs back, and with good reason. One thing we do know about low interest rates, they have killed savers and the elderly. Emerson Electric's CEO put it best when commenting on his company's uncertain outlook. U.S. and European governments are, quote, dysfunctional, and Washington is arranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. Suddenly, within just the past 2 weeks, with the market blow up and the GDP report for the second quarter, as well as the steep downward revision for the first quarter's activity, talk of a double dip recession is at the forefront of discussion. Throughout 2011, the Federal Reserve and the nation's top economists had all told us in looking ahead that we'd be swimming in 3% plus growth. Instead, we did about 0.8% in the first half, and maybe we double that if we're lucky in the second. One other item on Thursday during the Dow's 512-point rout, only three of the companies in the S&P 500 index rose. Well, that's all for this week. It's pretty lousy one, I think you'd agree. I'll be back with you next Saturday. Try and have fun this coming week. Take care.